This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Chelsea Podcast. My name's Chaz, and as ever, I have the very, very delightful and rich, mellifluous tones of Mr. Mooch. He's just been talking about how bassy his voice is. So, how are you, mate?
Good.
Give me that Barry White vibe. That's what I like to hear. So, you threatened that there might be daytime drinking going on today, given that last night's shambles.
I've been hitting harder stuff. I've been on the old gear. I've been making pizzas all day. Is actually what I've been doing.
It's a distraction activity, isn't it, mate?
It's quite therapeutic. It's
displacement. Yeah. Exactly. I can't say I blame you. We're joined tonight, Mooch and I, by a friend of the podcast, a comedian and comedy promoter. You may have been to his Mirth Control Club. It's Mr. Jeff Whiting. Jeff, thanks so much for coming back, mate.
No problem. Although you did choose a good night, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm sorry to bring you back at such... I think last time you came, we'd had the Brentford home game, which was also fairly disastrous.
Yeah.
So... yeah, sorry to keep bringing you back for the bad ones, but of course we don't know.
No worries.
That's going to be the case when we ask. Clearly this has been... it's been a bad couple of games. Last night, the result certainly was abysmal. We will go back over... or we'll come to later on where we go from here and et cetera, et cetera. But let's start with the FA Cup semi. We talked about it last week on the pod, Jeff, and none of us were super confident, it has to be said. But I think there's a fair to good argument that we should have won it. What was your take?
Yeah, I mean, obviously watching it live, you think at the time, in fact, looking at the highlights afterwards, it looked even more as if we should have won it than it did when it live. When you watch it live, you think, oh no, we didn't make it, or we didn't quite get that, or this didn't quite happen. Once you look back on it and add them together, you think, really? I mean, obviously there's a handball, which 50% of refs would have given that, in my opinion. It's just 50-50 whether the ref gave that. If he'd given it, they wouldn't have overturned it. They'd never have overturned it if he'd given it. VAR wouldn't have overturned that. But so that would have been, and the way Palmer takes penalties, could say that'd be 1-0. But obviously, Jackson is the problem, as we know, in both games. But I know we're talking about the FA Cup semi-final, but...
Well, no, I mean, it's fine for you to... Yeah, it's fine for you to skip forward as well. I mean, look, I mean, in the aftermath of the semi, a lot of the kind of the negative attention did fall on Jackson. There was a lot of you know, there was a lot of abuse, which was probably out of order. It was probably extensive. There was racist abuse, which is definitely out of order, for Christ's sake.
Any sort of abuse, inverted commas, is out of order, in my opinion. But criticism is different. But it shouldn't be based on anything other than the performance on the pitch, nothing to do with race, but criticism. But I don't know. I don't approve any player being abused. But as I said, criticism.
Even Tottenham players.
Well, I'm talking about Chelsea players. Well, I mean, look, I can understand people going on and saying, I don't want this bloke at my club anymore, get him out, whatever. That's one thing. But, you know, if you're sort of, you know, if you're chucking epithets at someone or trying to actually contact them on their own social media and calling them names, you know, it's just a little bit sad, really. But anyway, look, let's talk about Nico. I mean, he had three or four big chances to score, didn't take any of them. He got, he got a right bashing on social media. But then there was a sort of an immediate backlash, not only on social media, but also in by some, you know, actual proper commentators and pundits, saying that he does amazing thing. You know, his movement, he drags people out of the way, he holds the ball up, he plays with his back to goal, you know, he runs into channels, he's got a lot of pace. Now, I can see that, and I think on Monday, we probably saw a little bit more of that as well. But on Monday, Tuesday, against Arsenal, as against Man City at the weekend, he absolutely failed to show any sort of conviction when it came to having a brilliant chance to stick the ball in the net. I mean, you know, I don't think he can head the ball. You know, he scored a headed goal against Spurs earlier in the season where it sort of bounced off him. He absolutely fluffed a header on Saturday. He absolutely fluffed a header against Arsenal. That, I think, as much as I can see that he's got some qualities, and he definitely does have some qualities, when you're playing in the central striker role, you have to be able to take chances when they're presented to you. And he's really not convincing anyone at the moment he can do that. After scoring a lovely goal against Everton, it has to be said. Mooch, where are we now with him? Because, you know, we ebb and flow about him, don't we? And there's, as I say, there's clearly talent in there. But surely you get to a point where you can't be saying, oh, look at his runs off the ball, look at all of this. You know, if at the end of the day he's playing in your number nine role and he's not scoring.
Yeah, no, I know you. I know I feel the same frustration. You know, there's only so much defense of a player you can give when their main role is to score goals and they're not doing that at the frequency they should. I don't want to turn on any of our players, but it is I just want the season to be over. I want the season to be over, have a clean slate, start strong next season, and hopefully they'll have a bit more confidence and gelling, and if we get off to a good start, that's what we need. But it's so frustrating, but I've written this season off, you know, and
Yeah, I mean, I take your point. Jeff, would you see more value in him playing off somebody? And I appreciate we haven't had a number nine for him, you know, an out-and-out kind of old-fashioned striker for him to play off. And even, you know, in the few games we had Nkunku fit, we didn't really play Nkunku as a number nine and him sort of just off him. But do you see value in him, or is it, you know, people have sort of been comparing his season to Drogba's first season, and that's because of goals more than anything. But Drogba didn't play every game. There was lots of goals coming from other sources, and Drogba wasn't really missing as many out-and-out chances as Jackson has. I mean, are you inclined to be forgiving, or do you think, or you know, is it time we sort of started questioning, or at least finding him a different role? You know, if this isn't the right role.
Yeah, I mean, my main criticism, or not criticism, assessment of him is his decision making is terrible. So what it is you're right about everything else. Yeah, he's got these nice little ways of dragging the ball around a player, or he can beat even Walker. He was even beating Walker for pace, or at least giving Walker a lot of trouble for pace, which is against City, which is most people. Walker keeps up with most players, so he's got the pace. He's got this, as you said, he gets in the right channels. He's even got quite a nice little touch, like when he set up Palmer's goal against Everton. But then his decision making when it comes to scoring is terrible. Every time you look at it and think it's got to go to the keeper's right, it goes to the keeper's left and misses the post. Every time you think chip the keeper, he blasts it straight at him. Every time you think put that header in the top, you know, bounce that header up and loop it over the keeper, he puts it straight at him. Yeah. I mean, his decision making is just appalling when it comes to the crunch. And Drogba was never like that.
No.
Giroud's a player people forget. I mean, Giroud, I remember the header Giroud scored against Arsenal in the Europa League final, 4-1. That was a stooping header from the edge of the penalty area that went to the bottom corner. Can you imagine Jackson even thinking of trying to score that goal? I mean, you know, it's just hopeless. When you look at that, you think, Christ, you know, I mean, I think the only use he could possibly have, as you say, is playing either behind or wide. He's not
a
number nine. He's never.
To be fair to Jackson, like, he's at the infancy of his career, and Giroud was, past his best possibly, and was a lot more experienced. I'm just playing devil's advocate here, maybe we are. You know, this is first season with us, so I think we need to. Not be quite so reactionary after every. Game where he misses five or six chances.
I think you might have summed it up there, mate. I think you might have buried your own argument.
I'm trying to do what you do with Cole Palmer.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's what it's about. It's all about the debate. But, I mean, the thing is, I sort of despair at the fact that, you know, none of our front six, with the possible exception of Conor Gallagher, seems really confident and comfortable heading the ball. I find that really worrying. I find that really distressing. But I just in him, obviously, you know, we see it more in him because he has been the fulcrum of the attack, I suppose. You do make a valid point. You know, Drogba had played with Marseille at the top level of European football, or certainly in Europa League or UEFA Cup or whatever it was then before he came to Chelsea. So he was probably a little bit more experienced as well. But, you know, as I keep saying, I feel like he's more of a Solomon Kalou. And God bless Solomon Kalou. He did some good things for us. You know, he scored some goals. He got himself into good positions. He did tend to need 10 chances to score one goal, though. The classic example, in fact, where he didn't actually manage to score one goal, was the 2010 Cup final against Portsmouth, where he contrived to kick the ball over the bar from about 3 yards. But, you know, I just feel like there's definite qualities. You know, there are that you can look at these players and go, these people are not beyond, you know, they're not beyond salvation. But if you are playing centre forward, and we are relying on you, and you're one of our, you know, you're our second. I suppose the thing is that we know, don't we, that if a different, a proper striker, a proper number nine had been on the end of those chances, we would have probably won that cup semi. And that's the frustrating and upsetting thing.
Yeah, I feel sure of that. But I do agree with what Moot said, that, you know, he's had the pressure. What's happened really is because of injuries, and I know we don't want to make excuses about injuries, but he's had the pressure of being our number nine when he wasn't really supposed to be. I mean, not the only number nine. He wasn't supposed to be our only sole striker that we depended on for in every game for the entire season, and he more or less has been. And you could argue for a 22-year-old, it's a bit much. He's suddenly come in and he's got the pressure of a history of the strikers we've had before, like Drogba and Costa and all the rest of it, and even Giroud. And he's got the pressure on him, and maybe that's what gets in his head when he gets in on goal.
Yeah. I think you might be right. And certainly pre-season, he wasn't playing in that sort of central attacking role. You know, he was playing off Nkunku. So, you know, you have to assume that had Nkunku stayed fit, that's what would have happened this season. At least that's how he would have started. I mean, I did think last night it was, you know, summed him up. There was a chance that summed him up so beautifully. He did. He took a ball round the final defender beautifully in the Arsenal box and set himself up to shoot, and then shot straight at the keeper when there was so much of the goal for him to aim at. And it was just, I just thought it was so it was so typically him. Of course, last night it wouldn't have made so much difference. But anyway. Okay, well, I mean, you know, I think we all think, don't we, that, you know,
it's going to get better next season, that he's going to have something click, that there will be some reinforcements that will relieve some of the pressure of that those goals that we desperately need. But I think we also need to look at the defence, because that's where the real concern is for me.
The next thing I was going to say, there were some positives to take out of, you know, other than the fact that we didn't actually score, you know, there were some positives to take from Saturday's game. I thought we looked a lot more organized, and not that lasted very long, but you know, and the defense actually for once looked pretty solid,
apart from for 18 minutes.
Well, I mean, we just... sorry, no, I'm talking about on Saturday. I'm not talking about...
I'm not talking about
the Arsenal game. But, I mean, there was some... You know, I thought we were good at pressuring them. We were good at not giving them space in the middle of the pitch. We were at them very quickly. I thought Gallagher, Caicedo, Palmer and Enzo to a lesser extent... you know, they were harrying their players, getting the ball off, and, you know, getting the ball in, turning the ball around in very high positions in their half. That was very positive. I still don't think we were getting enough players in the box when we were breaking into the box, you know, and that was a problem again last night. But I thought the defence actually, on that occasion, it did okay. All right, I know we were breached in the end, but, you know, this is Manchester City, one of the best teams in Europe, if not the world. So, and even not playing at their sort of their utmost, that's a reasonable achievement, not to kind of keep them out for most of the game and limit them to one chance at the end. But did anyone stand out for you? Were any sort of, did anyone kind of make a case for staying in the team, or did anyone surprise you? Because as I say, I did feel like overall, it wasn't a terrible performance. It was a good performance, just one where we didn't take our chances.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say, well, obviously, Chalabar's done himself no harm, has he? Trevor, I mean, he's come back in after having been out for a while, either through not being chosen or being injured or both.
Yeah.
And he's come back in and worked his way back in, and now people would describe our best of the fit players, the best two being Silva and Chalabar, which is odd, which is why he was rather surprised neither of them played against Arsenal until the last 15 minutes, or 10 minutes, which seems slightly odd when you think they've just proved they've got in the groove against City, and who are a good side, and then they're both left out against Arsenal. I mean,
yeah,
that's...
I mean, we'll have to... Yeah, let's talk about that, because, as you say, I mean, I thought, you know, arguably there were two of our standout players. I thought Trev was very, very solid. We had a few eggy moments with them. You know, we did a lot of passing the ball out from the back, which, you know, I think we actually managed to keep control of the ball by, after doing that, and get it into Manchester City's half once. Every other time we gave it away or lost possession. I think it was very odd. And I even felt that Cucurella had a decent game as well. He worked very hard. A bit unlucky not to keep the goal out. It seemed... I can't quite fathom why, that being the case, where we've, you know, we've had two terrific results that have involved Trevor Chalabar. All right, sorry, no, Saturday wasn't a good result, but two solid defensive performances that have involved Trevor Chalabar, and I don't think he's really let us down at all this season when he has played. And then he's out again. And, you know, and Badia Shield has only just come back from injury anyway. Disasi, I think, was coming back from sickness. What is... you know, I defend Poch. We all do, I think. But you have to wonder what that was all about, unless there's something we don't know. Mooch, what did you make of it?
I don't know. I don't know what the sort of pick and mix defence that we have is. It's ever changing. Mm. And, you know, you think of, you know, that season with where we with Czech and Terry Carvalho, and it, you know, we knew what that back four was going to be. Everyone knew what it was going to be. It was a fortress. It was impenetrable. And they knew, they, you know, even they hadn't played together too long, but it just gelled. And after that season, it was just rock solid. But we don't have that. We've not had it for any decent run of games. I couldn't tell you what Poch's third back four is, and I don't think Poch could. I don't, you know, we've got so many defenders, so many are injured, so many are coming back, and then so many who when they have come back and previously done well just put in just disaster classes. You know, Disasi, Badiashile were great, you know, for games or last season, Badiashile especially, and now it's I have zero trust in him.
Yeah, Disasi had some good moments earlier in the season, certainly, but yeah, again, looked sort of off the pace yesterday. Badiashile,
I mean, he lives in possession all the time, Badiashile. It's so often at defence. I mean, apart from getting beaten in various other ways, but he loses, casino possession, which is in our third, coming out from the back. Badiashile does that, I think, more than anybody.
Yeah.
I agree he had a few good games last season, but the way he's playing at the moment, I wouldn't have Badiashile on the pitch unless we were desperate. I don't know what Poch, I mean, and I'm not a Poch out person either. I just think that with this squad, as Moot said, we need to worry about getting to the end of the season and restarting and buying some new players and regrouping, and I'm not a Poch out, But I do think last night's selection, if you want to be a conspiracy theorist, I even thought watching last night that Poch wants to avoid the Europa Champions Cup.
Conference.
I genuinely looked at it and thought, I think Poch wants to finish ninth or tenth. I couldn't think of any reason for that selection other than we'll just throw this game. You know, it's Arsenal away, so we're probably going to lose anyway. We might as well throw it and then worry about trying to get a draw at Villa or whatever.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
A new equation for switching on outcomes is here from PwC. It's human-led and tech-powered. It's PwC with Oracle, SAP, Salesforce, and Workday. It's PwC with Microsoft, AWS, and Google. Simplify your systems and amplify your results. Switch on outcomes with PwC and their alliances. Learn more at pwc.com.
Well, it was very odd, certainly. My only kind of potential rationale for it is that he thought that they'd both put in massive shifts. Obviously, Silva's 40 years old or whatever. They'd both put in huge shifts. But to me, I would have thought, you know, Trevor hasn't played that much football this season. You could have relied on him to play again a couple of days later. But there we go. But on Saturday, we had the, as we'd anticipated, we had to do a lot of shuffling around to accommodate all of our, in inverted commas, best players, which meant that Conor Gallagher ended up on the left and frankly had probably one of his, I mean, he probably had a more involved and a more effective game last night against Arsenal than he did against City. I know it, you know, who cares when, you know, when you lose 5-0, but it was very odd to see him stuck out there. So there's some really odd decisions seem to be being made. And as I say, as you say, Jeff, it's hard to kind of, sometimes it is a little bit hard to, you know, you can't feel that Poch is entirely blameless when stuff like that happens. However, I mean, we could have won on Saturday again. As you already pointed out, there was one penalty shout for the handball. There was another one which I thought was pretty good, which was when Kyle Walker pretty much shoved Jackson off the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, not just here, not just in our games, it seems more and more that refereeing decisions, not even talking about offsides, which, you know, there's dodgy VAR offsides this weekend as well, which were also frustrating, but at least, you know, you can see the thinking behind those. But when you see a handball like Grealish's, or the ball coming off Grealish's hand like it did,
and
not being given, then Wan-Bissaka's being given, and then on the Sunday, and then there was another game this weekend. Which one was it? Oh yeah, Ashley Young. Ashley Young was hit. You know, one of Nottingham Forest have absolutely done their nut, because they should have had three penalties, and I thought two of them were pretty much stonewall. One of those was a handball. The ball went to his arm. He's up. He was jumping, so his arm was up, but the ball went to his arm. His arm wasn't next to his body. And it's, you know, it's the consistency again.
Yeah.
Do you see there any way around it? Because we're still, you know, this VAR was supposed to sort of save this, and it's actually not doing it, because the people involved in you know, my friend, you know, Jack, who's a friend of the show, always says blame the rule, not the tool. And I don't think I think it's about the subjectivity of it.
I think some people would be calling some of the video guys the tool at the moment. Well, I mean, you know, I just think it's a bit like, well, I won't compare it to traffic wardens, but you know what I mean? Once you give somebody some power, they start deciding they want to use it all the time, even if it's not necessary. Do you know what I mean? And these VAR guys, I mean, the Coventry decision was ridiculous. I mean, you know, I mean, there's no way. Are you supposed to give the attacking side the benefit of the doubt?
Yes.
It's ridiculous in the circumstances of 121st minute, about, you know, half an inch offside. I mean,
it's absolutely
going to go on. It's just, I mean, if I'd never thought I'd say it, because I thought VAR was great, but I'd scrap it the way I'm going at the moment. I'm getting so fed up with it. I just think it's just becoming an absolute total distraction. It's just
becoming. I mean, I think they need to make it efficient, and I think they need, with offsides, there is, I'm told, moves afoot for next season to go down that route of there needs to be, I don't know if it's going to be daylight, but there needs to be, like, if, I think, or it might even be that if some of the player's body is onside.
That's exactly what we need, a new rule change to confuse everyone even more.
And, but I mean,
and then slightly change it again next year back to what it was 2 years ago.
Yep.
Fuck
Keep
it.
Keep adapting
fuck
it just
off.
As. I mean, I'm so sick of it. And okay, we did lose out, but now when you lose out now and you see why you've lost out and you go, I can't understand that decision at all, that almost makes it worse, doesn't it? You know? As you say,
how do they do it in rugby? Like, everyone says they get it right in rugby, but I don't watch rugby, so I'm not really sure if they do get it right. But in other sports, it seems to be they've got. Are we not bribing the right people? How do we get like these decisions happening?
Well, I think it just seems that there's. I mean, in rugby, they seem to use it for just whether the ball's down on a try, mainly.
Pretty much.
They do use it for other things.
Well, sending off. They do if there's serious foul play.
Mm. Yeah, but they seem a little bit more. The trouble is, with VAR with football, is there's so many things they use it for. I mean, they use it for, like, retrospective red cards, and they use it for offside all the time. Then they use it for, like, infringements, and then they use it for giving penalty. I mean, you know, VAR will give a penalty for something in the penalty area during a corner that nobody's noticed, and nobody even appealed for, but they won't give a penalty when someone's taken down. You know what I mean? Mm. It's just no logic to the way VR works. It's just baffling how they just. I just think those VAR guys have got too much power, to be quite honest. I just think they're getting a bit. They want to get involved and want to start fiddling about, interfering with stuff. And why didn't they send Michael Oliver to the monitor?
Absolutely.
I mean,
VAR is only as good as the people who use it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that rule handball, you only have to read the rule. You know, it says if the arm isn't close to the body, if it's outside the natural line of the body, it's a handball. You look at Grealish, and then you look at Grealish's face on the close up the minute after it happened, and he's giving it that grin that, like, I've just got away with it.
Mm.
For God's sake, why didn't they ask him to go look at the monitor if they think they don't want to get involved?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, and then we have a very different week. We have a very different attitude going into the Arsenal game. We have a very different attitude. I reckon if we'd have taken City to, if we'd have managed to take City to extra time, we would have won, because they, you know, they put up a good effort, but they were clearly leggy. I mean, both sides were, but City had that 120 minutes earlier that week. So, I mean, it's very disappointing. It's very frustrating. And as I say, we did enough, I feel, like that we could have won that. And that's a whole season changer. You know, you go into a final against Man U, who, let's face it, aren't playing at the absolute peak of their abilities at the moment. And, you know, that, and you win a trophy and you're looking at a whole different season. Anyway, we never know what would happen. Of course, it might not have gone that far. Oh, Everton are 2-0 up at Liverpool. That's exciting. And United are only drawing 2-2 with Sheffield United. So anyway, let's move on to the Arsenal.
Are you saying, Ted, we're not the only people that can cock it up? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just trying. It's Schadenfreude, isn't it? I'm just trying, Jeff, to take some pleasure in other people's travails. I mean, you look at Man U, and probably Ten Hag's had more grief from his fan base, and probably had more pressure on him, and more sort of like speculation about his job than Poch has. And yet, you know, he's the one who's in the cup final and who's in a European place. Anyway, it is highly entertaining to see Klopp bugger it all up in his final season. So let's hope Everton do manage to keep on. So let's talk about the Arsenal game. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? We've all come to this the day after and no one's in a good mood about it. As you know, we try to be the optimistic podcast, but look, I watched it again today, and weirdly, it doesn't feel like a 5-0.
It reads like a 4-0.
But knowing the result and watching it with a sort of a slight sense of detachment that I can't have when I'm watching it live, remarkably, certainly up until the third goal, it didn't feel like they were way ahead of us. It didn't feel like we were... we're still having the same finishing problems, but I felt like we were competing. But, I mean, it's, again, finishing let us down. End of the first half, I thought, you know, most of the first half, after the first goal, we played fairly well. Had a couple of good chances. Couldn't put them away, but went into the break going, okay, we've still got a foot in this game.
Just.
What happens at half-time? I mean, we don't seem to start either half of a game very well, but you would think, would you not, that after half-time, if you're a goal down, that's when you come out all guns blazing. That's when you come out being roused by the rousing speech of your captain or your manager's tactical nous, and that's when you come out and you start impressing. But what happened last night?
Well, I'd say, I mean,
it, oh, go, sorry, Jeff.
Sorry, I occasionally long for the days of Mourinho, who would sub players after 35 minutes, let alone half time. You know, it seems Pochettino, and I'm not going to go again. I'm not a Poch out protagonist. But it has seemed that Pochettino, a lot of managers, follows a sort of rule book in his head. You don't put subs on until about 60 minutes unless someone's injured. You just don't do it. And when Mourinho used to sub players at 35 minutes because it wasn't working.
Or triple sub.
Yeah, or triple sub. At half time, right, last night, and I'm not claiming too wise after the event, I tweeted, get Chalobah and Silva on now at half time. Put them on now at half time. Get rid of Badishan and Desarze at half time. I don't want to see them come back out. Get Chalobah and Silva on at half time. Put them out at the beginning of the second half. I tweeted that. Because it was so obvious it needed doing, and he did it about 10 minutes from the full time, or 15 minutes. Mm. I mean, Mourinho, I'm not a Mourinho getting Mourinho back merchant either. I'm just pointing out that Mourinho, in my opinion, would have subbed two or three players at half time, and he would have freshened that up. He'd have put changed the centre backs, changed a player, got Chukwuemeka on or someone like that, and said, right, now we're going to come out with more energy, better, stronger at the back, more energy going forward. And Poch, the one thing about Poch is he is very predictable. He's thinking, no, you don't do subs yet. We come back out, we try not to 1-0, and then we see how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I think because we probably, you know, we had competed to an extent. For the rest of the first half, you know, first 10 minutes, maybe not so much, but thereafter we'd sort of put in a bit of a better game, say, had a few chances, started to look like we were playing our way into the game. Maybe he was thinking, well, you know, we'll continue that when we come out, fair dues, but when that doesn't happen, you know, when it's clear in the first 10 minutes it's not happening for you, and something's, you know, you've lost some of that spark.
Yeah.
Surely that's when you make a change.
Even 55 minutes.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it was, and you know, we'd gone from what was our, you know, two of our better defensive displays. As I say, the Everton game was a shutout, our first one for absolutely ages.
Yeah.
Man City game, we're playing, as I say, one of the best teams in Europe. And we... And, you know, we keep them down to one goal, possibly slightly unlucky to concede that as well. And yet then we go to Arsenal and we change our defence. And once again, it all seems to go for shit. And it's very, very baffling. And at the end, you know, we had four centre-backs on the pitch. So we were playing a back five, four of whom were centre-backs. And then Cucurella was on. So Cucurella was the only one who was sort of playing vaguely in his
natural position.
Yeah. Well, actually, no. Well. Sorry, two of the centre backs were playing in natural position. But anyway, it was a bizarre way of doing things. I couldn't quite see. I don't know if he didn't want to hoik Badiashile because he didn't want to knock his confidence. You know, but.
But the 5-0 definitely helped it.
Yeah,
fair points. And all the newspaper articles saying we should get rid of him absolutely immediately. Yeah. Yeah, it's... Oh, dear.
As I said, what moved to the beginning, I think we've got a reset in the summer. I mean, in a way, the only thing you can say in a positive way is we've got about 9 players out and it will be like 9 signings if they all recover in some of those.
Well, this is the thing.
And Colwell, and then James and Chilwell. I mean, we could have had a back four of, you know, four players didn't even play last night. A much better back four, four players that didn't play last night. So you could say, if you wanted to try and look at the optimistic way of looking at it, that we've had so many injuries that it'd be like getting new signings in. But I wonder if there's something wrong with the physios or something wrong with the health and fitness at our club.
Well, that's another thing that's, you know, weighed on my mind this season. Why has it been so bad? And why is it taking so long for people to come back from what I can tell? I mean, they seem to be muscle injuries. Okay, you
there's
know,
something up. There's something up because there's no transparency really with the injuries and like, you know, with time frames on getting people back. It just seems to be sort of smoke and mirrors. And is it players and agents playing silly buggers? Is it the manager trying to protect players? I don't know. He doesn't think they're ready to come back yet. He doesn't want them in the team, so he says they're injured. Is it there's some sort of voodoo that's been put on us by Mourinho?
Tottenham fans with little blue dolls. Yeah. What I've heard said is that, and this happened a bit when he was at Tottenham, that Poch and his coaches are... They're known for their kind of very high intensity training sessions. They want players to be super fit. They want them to press. an awful lot. So that possibly leads them to being more susceptible to injury. Now, you know, that doesn't explain why Gallagher and Jackson and other people haven't really had injuries, or that some people have had injuries and come back quite quickly. Other people, you know, I say with Nkunku, I'm not entirely sure what his injury is. What happened to him? Lavia
was injured before he started training with us. So
he was.
And then
came back for 20 minutes and then was just told, we were told he's out for the rest of the season. I mean,
let's be honest. You know, I mean, Fofana's a distant memory, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Colwell's been out for, over a month or whatever. I mean...
Yeah, and I thought that was his toe or something. And, you know, you think to yourself, how badly can you hurt your toe that you have to be out for this long? I mean, maybe I'm being ill-informed. But it does... I mean, it's something that we're going to need to look at over the summer, because I'm not sure we are going to be able to... You know, I don't know if we'll be able to buy without selling.
It seems to be something that was right under Abramovich, isn't it? It seemed to be something we used to be quite good at. And
We'd always get players back well before their sort of expected sort of return. And you know, we didn't have too many huge injuries.
Now, bring back Eva.
Yeah.
Well, that's what people say, though, isn't it?
I mean, it was... there's a lot of stuff that we can... I mean, I think the thing that most worried me, I think, about last night, I mean, is that... I don't feel like there was any point where
Ben White scored two goals against us.
Oh man! Well, this out. Oh, come on!
I know. But fucking.
But all right, I take the point.
Ben White.
I mean, Poch said, didn't he, that he thought the team gave up after the third goal? I mean, what do you make of that?
I mean,
whether or not he believes it, whether or not he actually thinks that's the case, to say it.
Yeah, that is worrying when you start throwing your players under the bus and you want it. Like, you know, Mourinho would, well, actually, no, Mourinho would do that, but he'd do it with one individual player and ruin their rise. It just shatter one player's as a pawn in a chess game, just their confidence just shot.
Just to build him back up again, of course.
But they'd still love him. That's the thing. They'd probably still love him for it. But so I worry about Poch's man management and the level of control and what he dictates and what is actually action on the pitch. I don't know if it's what he wants and what is being instructed in training. Is it being executed on the pitch?
I think that's where people would like to see him doing a bit more on the touchline. I know he did, by his standards, he was slightly animated against Man City, by his standards. But even against Arsenal, did you see him on the touchline waving his arms about furiously, shouting at players to get in position when we were 2-0 down? I didn't.
Look, it's different strokes for different folks, and not everyone's like that. But
yeah, but if it's instructions, if they're not following instructions, why isn't it at the side reminding them of the instructions? What's he?
Yeah, fair dues.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Whether you're making a delicious family meal or a post-workout snack, choose the farm-fresh taste of Eggland's Best Eggs. Only Eggland's Best hens are fed their proprietary all-vegetarian feed. That's what makes their eggs more nutritious. with 10 times more vitamin E, 25% less saturated fat, and 6 times more vitamin D compared to ordinary eggs. Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com to learn more.
I mean, there's been, again, as in everything, I think there's, you know, you tend to get either extreme. You know, on social media and in news reports, you get, you know, I mean, there's a big, big crowd, as we know, as we both know, there's a big sort of social media potch out gang. And of course, they were out in force again. Equally, there's a lot of people who sort of say, you know, there's it make no difference. And I think they're probably right to an extent. It would make very little difference because, you know, there's inherent problems that we've had with the recruitment, with the squad we've got, with the injuries we've got, etc., etc. Having said that, he clearly can't be, and we've said this before, he can't be entirely blameless. When you see things like the decisions to change the two central defenders, when you see things like Gallagher being played on the left, when you see him really kind of sort of
Alfie
persevering
Gilchrist.
With some... Yeah, well,
yeah. I mean,
I'm not sure. I had a lot of choice with picking up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, he's not entirely blameless because of the situation to a degree.
Yeah. The only thing I did like about Gilchrist is that he had a go at Trossard, and I thought, well, that bodes a little bit well for the future because, you know, I mean, I'm not being funny when I say this, but because when you look at JT and all those guys and Cahill and all the rest of them, you know, when they were older, when they were 25, 26, they didn't muck, you know, they would take on anybody physically or mentally. And I did like to see Gilchrist getting a little bit stuck into Trossard, who's a much older, more experienced player, and looking like he wanted to get, you know, even if it got, you know, he needled him a bit, vice versa. But I mean, it's at least because Gilchrist does look a bit like, I mean, he's got a baby face. He looks a bit naive, but I quite like to see him taking Trossard out by the.
I like Alfie Gilchrist. It's.
I mean, I think the overriding opinion, you know, the overriding social opinion on social media is that, you know, perhaps he wasn't quite ready for the standard that, you know, it was his first start in the Premier League, and perhaps it was he was thrown in at the deep end. And the other thing we have to remember, of course, is that. He's really a centre back, and he's playing right back.
Yeah, and also he was hung out to dry a bit, wasn't he, for their first goal? I mean, he was trying to defend against two players.
Yeah.
There was nobody else there.
I don't think he was seriously to blame, or certainly no more seriously to blame than anyone else in the defence.
No,
last night. And you're right. He's got, you know, I think people want to give him a bit of credit anyway because he's one of our own, as they say. But you're right, mate. He's got a little bit of grit about him. He's not unconfident. I think he's clearly Chelsea through and through. And, you know, he's only going to get better for the experience, I hope.
Well,
I don't think it's going to be.
Talking about that, what do you guys make of Madueke then?
the unified sigh there is one of frustration. I think he can be a really dangerous player. He's got something about him, and you know, in certain clutch moments, I believe he will be a player who can turn a game. But it's not consistently like that, and it's a bit.
I mean, once again, he's very young, but I do think there's two things for me. One is his. He can create chaos.
You know,
at his best, he running at defenders, running into the box, are either getting a cross in or forcing a foul in the box, like the Man United game. That is his strength. He can also, you know, one out of every five of his shots is an absolutely brilliant strike and a goal. But, you know, the other four tend to be still sailing up towards orbit.
What do you make of his temperament, though? The way he's been going on?
Yeah.
You know, the trying to grab the ball for the penalty and then having a joke with Grealish just after, well, Thiago Silva was crying.
I think there's things that we could, you know, I understand that. And I think the juxtaposition made it look worse, obviously, because you had Silva, who was obviously, you know, deeply disappointed. It wasn't a good optic, but I can't, you know, I thought the penalty thing, the Everton penalty thing, was much worse than, you know, seeing him laughing with Grealish. I feel like, and also I feel like Jackson,
yeah,
you know, was probably more at fault that night, and also spent a lot of his time sat on his ass complaining on Saturday as well in the cup game. I mean, he did get a couple of big knocks from defenders, but he'd then sort of like sit complaining about it and shouting at the referee and, you know, and I feel like he's got every right to have a better grip on his horses, really, than Madueke has, who's younger, hasn't played as many high-class games, etc., etc. But yeah, he's not the finished article yet. He's getting games on the right, which means that when Cole Palmer's fit and healthy, he'll be presumably playing through the middle, which I think is a good thing. But here's another thing. You know, Mudryk started last night, and I don't even think Mudryk was terrible, certainly not in the first half. But you do have to wonder, what does it say about Raheem Sterling? Because I did feel last night that perhaps, you know, that might have been just someone with just a little bit more nous, a little bit more experience on the left. And I know Sterling's had some absolutely, you know, has had some poor performances this season, but I felt like this might have been the game where someone with a little bit more focus than Mudryk might have been a better option.
Nah.
Jeff, you're not convinced, I can tell. Yeah, nor are you, Mooch.
I like Mudryk, man, and I think
I don't dislike
him. I just think we need to be getting him more games and seeing him develop more.
I mean, what's weird is that he actually, when we've seen him strike a ball, he's in the main, he's been very impressive. The thing that we sort of bought him for, which was to be Billy Whiz on the left and go past players, he doesn't really seem to, he doesn't do that very well, and he doesn't chase back very well. Neither arguably does Madueke. And perhaps more annoyingly, they're not quite fast enough at getting into positions in the box when the ball was coming in from the opposite side. So Jackson, you know, Jackson found himself with the ball in the final third last night a couple of times and had no real support getting up there with him. So they're frustrating players, both of them, I think. And it's, you know, it's whether you kind of say, well, we can see that they're talented and we persevere, or you sort of look for at least another short-term
They did say, didn't they, last night, I think due to the lineup we put out and due to the subs, that we've now fielded the youngest ever side in the Premier League over the games to date. And then, so unless that changes, by the end of the season, we might have fielded the youngest ever team in the Premier League and the youngest team in this year's Premier League, obviously, part of that. So I suppose if these guys are saying this is the plan, and, you know, it means us fans are going to be sitting there suffering like this for another 3 or 4 years till they're all 25, and then they'll be shit hot and they'll be winning the Premier League and the Champions League and everything else if they manage to keep all the players.
Presumably that is the plan. You just have to hope they all develop at the same pace, and, you know, none of them get seriously injured and none of them get pissed off with the fact that they're not getting game time, or, you know, not playing, or we're having knockbacks in all these competitions. But I mean, obviously, you know, I think one thing that Chelsea fandom as a whole can agree on is that the project, such as it is poorly thought out.
I'm worried. You know, I'm genuinely worried, if I'm honest, because I don't want to be United. I don't want to be just rudderless for another season, and then, have a whole new philosophy brought in and just be completely, you know, Arsenal got it right. I mean, it still annoys me because in my mind, I'm still just reveling in the days of Arsenal fan TV when there was just meltdowns, when they were just... And it still hasn't sunk in that they're really good now. And it's just so annoying. It seems like yesterday when they were just at the laughing stock, but that's us now at the moment.
Yeah, and they're really good with probably a lot fewer stars and, you know, some players who are clearly cast-offs from other clubs. and they've done, you know, and he's moulded them into something really very good. I mean...
Mind you, though, I mean, people do remember that Arteta had about three or four bad years where something...
And Arsenal wanted him out. Arsenal fans wanted him out.
Yeah, they did,
clearly.
Yeah. And then, not surprisingly, they were down at the bottom half of the table at the beginning of two of the seasons.
Well, here's a question for you then. As I say, last week, you know, after the Everton win, we were talking about the possibility of winning our game in hand, whichever game you took that to be, and being as high as seventh, and, you know, looking at a European place, or getting a European place through being in the cup final or winning the cup final or whatever. Two games on, we're now looking like we're not going to make Europe through anyway, through any avenue. The Poch out crowd are, you know, are loud and proud again. Do we need to take a more balanced view? And I'm not talking just about, we're shit and, or, you know, we're bang average and blah, 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 blah. What I'm saying is, do we need to say this season we are better than last season? We've scored more points than last season. We'll probably end higher in the league than last season. We've made one cup final. We've made one cup semi-final. All of this is on top of the... All of this is despite the fact that we have an incredibly young squad. We threw out most of our old squad and we've had ridiculous injuries.
Yeah.
Do we need to be more nuanced?
Yes, I think we do, yeah.
Okay, because the other side of that coin is, yeah, but we're still getting beaten by five at Arsenal.
I think...
You know, that's never acceptable.
You know what,
clear.
I think we do need to be more nuanced, but it's hard after a 5-0 drubbing. Do you know what I mean? When we're putting up a decent performance against City, and, you know, we probably should have won the game, and when 5-0 is almost just like a sackable scoreline. Do you know what I mean? And it's just it's done a lot of damage.
Well, yeah, I'd agree, but I think it's really difficult because you can't tell. I mean, you just can't tell, do you? None of us really know. I mean, like, they're talking about the fact the new manager at Palace has apparently, you know, completely transformed the way the team plays without buying any players. And therefore, Hodgson must have been doing something wrong because this new manager's got them playing at a level beyond anything. Then they're thrashing people 5-2 and all this sort of thing. And it's the same group of players. So you're just very hard to tell. If you applied that logic, you'd say, well, therefore we bring in somebody like that guy, he's going to go well beyond Pochettino. But how do you know? Unless you do it, you don't really know, do you?
Well, you don't, because, I mean, I suppose that was the thinking behind, you know, bringing in Potter. Mm. And look how that turned out. But, I mean, to be fair to Hodgson, I would just say this, is that, you know, he hardly ever had Eze, Olise.
No.
Mateta all playing at the same time. You know, there was some stat I watched on Match of the Day, and I think they've only played together like five games this season. So,
talking of which, I know it might not be on the agenda in the comments, but what do you think about signings, you guys? I mean, some talking about Elise Day and about Eze and about some of these other players, or not just them, anybody.
Well, I'm just worried that we're going to be constrained and we're not going to be able to buy the obvious signing that, you know, that we need, which is a ruthless, horrible bastard centre forward.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's the thing that I want most. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mean it leaves us trying to reunite with Lukaku, which is his old imaginable. I mean, not only did he play appallingly badly for us most of the time, apart from scoring a couple of decent goals in the World Club Cup, you know, competition, whatever. But apart from, you know, on his odd day, he was generally fairly lethargic, fairly hopeless, and didn't seem to have the right attitude. But there's a lot of fans on social media talking about this should be the answer. Get Lukaku back. I thought
that's desperation. I think, like, the way he behaved, I don't think you want that sort of player and that the personnel management team around him anywhere near your dressing room. And I think that's this is one of the problems that we've got is the mentality and the attitude of some players was of paramount importance when we were signing players in our pomp. It wasn't just do they fit the profile. It was do they fit the profile in their style of play, physical attributes, but also the mentality. And that's where I feel we are seriously lacking, because we're going down a route of player potential, buying youth, and having these long contracts where we can fiddle the books a bit in a hope to sort of have players which have got bigger sell-on potentials, or rather than delivering in.
It only works if you don't, knock all the stuffing out of that player by being shit for three seasons, and getting knocked out of competitions, or not playing in Europe, or them not getting injured, there's so much that has to go right with that as a policy. And I think
we could do a deal with Brentford. Would you guys want Tony?
I'd take him as opposed to nothing. I mean, if it was a choice between him or not getting a striker, I'd absolutely have him. I'm not saying he's been
looking at
since he's come.
I think they might even swap some players. I mean, if we gave them two for, if you look at who we've got, I mean, they may want a couple of our players. Do you know what I mean? And they're saying
they're on Poch.
30, 40 million quid. They say, well, Poch, take Thomas Frank and a swap. No, but what I mean is, they're talking about that. They're talking about they might sell him for 40 million. I mean, which seems odd to me, but.
Well, I think whatever happens is it looks very much like we will have to sell before we buy. We'd have to sell before we buy anyone else on top of that. And the way things are going, that looks like Trevor Chalobah, Conor Gallagher, two of our, two players who, we know the reason why they would be the first to be sold. But we also, anyone who watches Chelsea knows that they're the players that we probably least should be selling, or a couple of them at least.
I hope he wasn't playing Gilchrist to put in a shop window, so somebody might think he's worth 15, 20 million, whatever.
Yeah. It'd be a shame for him to be another Lewis Hall. Well. I don't think he's quite there yet. No.
But what do you think of Wisser at Brentford? Do you think he's a decent player?
Yeah, I do. I mean, and I think Mbeumo is even better, although obviously he's a midfielder. But I think, those two together are a cracking combination. Mm. Someone might be in with him. I think Elise is a fantastic player. Getting him, is he going to be fit for 35 games a season plus? I don't know. But, they were singing his praises on Match of the Day this weekend, and, maybe he's got even bigger potential to be going to not an even bigger club. We're a bloody big club, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. But to a club that sort of can offer him, top flight European football at least. Right, gents, I think, I suppose we've talked our way around to the fact that it is what it is. This week has been a very disappointing one, but, we're aware of our limitations, at least, and we're all kind of counting down for next season to start. What do you think we need to do for the rest of the season, Jeff? I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about wanting, thinking that good performances were more important than results. But at this stage, would you just take six chatty 1-0 wins
for the rest of the season? Because try telling fans that performances are more important when it comes to going down. I've got one particular mate, he won't even go to the pub if we lose. He is so flipping invested. If we lose a game, he says, forget that, I'm not going down to the pub now, I can't face anybody after that. Try telling somebody it's performance that counts. I'll be honest, I think really we'd take, Villa away, we'd take a very scrappy 1-0 win with a lucky penalty that was given by VAR. We'd take whatever we can get,
Spurs even more so.
Well, I know we want to play well, but I'm just saying, after the last two games, we could really do with getting at least a draw at Villa, and that's an ask because they're playing very well. But I'd like to see him play the best possible defence, which means Chalabar and Silva, unless somebody comes back unexpectedly, like Cole or someone.
Hold your horses, my friend. We've got to do the preview show in just a minute. Don't go rushing onto that. But yeah, you make a very good point, mate. You make a very good point, which is, you know, you want us to, and the quite right one, which was we should be picking our best side, developing the team that we really want to develop, keeping everyone fit, and ideally getting some results just so we can end the season with a bit of a smile on our face, even if it doesn't mean a place in Europe and obviously it's not going to mean any silverware. Mm. All right, lads. Well, look, I think we've tried to be as honest and as fair to the team as we possibly can do after what was a horrendous night yesterday. Thanks so much for joining us. Jeff, we're going to get you back, as I say, to talk about the Villa game in the preview show. But thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, mate. Mooch as ever. It's
painful.
It's been
painful this week.
You're never that, mate. You're never that. But, you know, get the gack out and we'll forget all about it. Only joking, okay. Listeners. Right. Yeah, don't do drugs, kids. We'll be back for the preview show. Thanks for listening. Take it easy.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.